We'll hear arguments next in Reeves Incorporated against State. Irvin, I think you may proceed when you're ready now.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I represent Reeves, Inc., plaintiff in the action below and petitioner before this court. The issue presented in this case concerns the application of the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution of a state policy favoring its own citizens over citizens of other states in the sale of products owned and manufactured by that state. The petitioner is here on a writ of certiorari from the United States Court of Appeals, 8th Circuit, which held that this preferential state policy did not violate the Commerce Clause. The state of South Dakota owns and operates a cement plant in Rapid City, South Dakota, which manufactures, sells, and distributes cement. This cement plant was authorized by the citizens of South Dakota by constitutional amendment in 1918.
Mr. Kervin, Is there any South Dakota law or constitutional provision which would prevent a private cement plant from operating in South Dakota?
I do not know of any law which would prevent a private cement plant from operating in South Dakota.
So that in effect you have the state-owned one, but you could also have a private one in competition with it.
There could be a private manufacturer. In 1920, there is published a 1920 report of the South Dakota Cement Commission, published document, which was the study made at that time concerning the availability of cement and the feasibility of building a cement plant in South Dakota. And that report indicates that there have been two attempts by private industry to build a cement plant in the state of South Dakota, and that they had both failed. And the one plant was built, and the report is not clear, but it indicated that it ran out of funds and closed its doors. There was cement being supplied to the state of South Dakota by a manufacturer located out of the state at that time.
But so far as you know, there's no statutory prohibition against another private plant making another effort, even though it might be unsuccessful.
None that I'm aware of.
Suppose these two private operations having gone out of business, this is hypothetical now, and the state had a lot of road building to carry on, and so they set up their own cement plant for their own road construction. Not for commercial purposes, not for proprietary purposes. You think they'd have to sell cement to non-South Dakota residents just because they were maintaining a plant for their own purposes?
Is it
because they have entered the commercial stream of commerce that you make your point?
In the case where the cement plant was an exclusively in-state process for the state itself and not for the state citizens, but for the public roads that are required that the state normally supplies to, as a governmental service, then that would not be, there would be no requirement that a resident who comes from, say, the state of Wyoming would have a right to purchase any cement or be treated in the marketplace as any other competitor, because the state really has never placed the cement in interstate commerce at that point. It's not involved as a participant in the market as they are today, because they participate in the marketplace. They solicit sales in a 7-8 state area. In 1977, 48% of the shipments of this plant went outside of the state. Now, Reeves is a Wyoming corporation. It has purchased cement from the South Dakota Cement Commission for a period of over 20 years. And during that period of time, it has received salesmen who have asked for about the needs of the cement plant, and the order's been placed, and the cement has been either picked up by Reeves itself or delivered to the cement plant by trucks from the plant, hired by the plant.
Didn't have a long-term contract for delivery.
No, there was no long-term contract. There's no written contract, period. The customary course of dealing with ready-mix dealers is to make sales purchases over the phone, orders over the phone, based primarily for the reason that you have no storage capacities. Most ready-mix don't have the type of storage facilities.
Well, you can't store cement for very long after you've processed it, can you?
Well, it requires special silos, which most ready-mix, small ready-mix dealers would not have. So their needs are more or less met on as their demand comes in for concrete, they order more cement.
The history you've outlined about the financial failures of the private enterprise cement plants indicates that for some reason or other, it's not a very profitable business. Now, is it possible that the state taxpayers of South Dakota are to some degree already subsidizing the present plant? And if they do subsidize a plant with tax revenues, which obviously they did to launch it, can't they favor the people who have taken the financial risk, independent of the Commerce Clause?
Well, I don't know that they are subsidizing it this time.
Well, they had to subsidize it to build it in the first place, didn't they? I assume it was built with taxpayers' money.
It was. It was built on the sale of bonds by the state, and there was an assessment against the citizens to pay off the bonds.
Does the record show whether it makes a profit or not?
The record does not show that. I don't know whether the court could take judicial notice of it or not.
Mr. Kerwin, about 30 years ago, South Dakota had a bad year for pheasants. And it was decreed that no Minnesota or Wyoming or non-South Dakota hunter could come into South Dakota and hunt pheasants. The South Dakota Supreme Court upheld that ruling, and this court dismissed the appeal. Do you think that has any bearing on this case, adversely to your position?
I think it does, particularly after Hughes v. Oklahoma, Your Honor, which dealt, of course, with the minnows in Oklahoma, and which expressly overruled Gear v. Connecticut, which was concerned the killing of wild game in Connecticut and the transportation of that game outside of the state.
But Hughes was a state regulation that applied to everybody within the state, private or public, was it not?
It restricted the transportation of minnows of natural minnows harvested from state waters for resale outside of the state.
And here, as I understood your earlier answer to my question, there's no statutory prohibition against a private corporation going into the cement manufacturing business in South Dakota and competing with the state-owned one.
No, there's not. But the issue is whether or not a consumer can go to any marketplace in the United States and be free from the exploitation of that person because it happens to go into the state of South Dakota being the cement market. The state of South Dakota has enjoyed all of the benefits of interstate commerce. And not only has this plant been subsidized by tax dollars of the citizens of South Dakota, it has been subsidized by people who buy cement from the plant. That's their other source of revenue, with 48% of the cement going out of the state. Other people have paid and made payments to the plant over the course of dealings with that plant, which have resulted in its continued success.
Does this plant pay taxes to the state of South Dakota for its operations?
It pays the profit over, I think, it pays the profit over that it does make to the state treasury.
But does it pay, have all the incidents of the private plants that went broke, income taxes, real estate taxes?
No, whatever? It doesn't. It has the power of eminent domain. It has the...
No, I'm just talking about profits now. Taxes. Do they tax the income? Do they tax the real estate?
I do not believe they tax the income, and I believe the real estate is not taxed.
Maybe that's why they can produce cement cheaply enough to induce the people of Wyoming to come over to South Dakota to buy it rather than making it themselves.
I wouldn't know the answer to that.
Whether it doesn't. It's just a matter of simple economics. If Wyoming could make it as cheaply or cheaper, would Wyoming do just what South Dakota does? Or private enterprisers in Wyoming set up plants?
Well, I feel that's certainly a possibility. If it reaches a point where we have a scarcity of resources, whether it be cement or any other place, where a state, through its police powers and its ability to exempt certain operations from, say, paying taxes, or using its power of eminent domain to acquire a business which deals in a natural resource, and feels that it could, in fact, operate the plant with less at a less competitive price than is available either by private industry or another, that barriers between interstate commerce are going to be set up when preferences are then granted to these particular states. And that's what creates the trade barrier.
Are there no cement plants in Wyoming?
There is one cement plant in Wyoming, in the southern part of the state. It does not serve the area where my client is.
Where is it?
The cement plant is in Laramie, Wyoming.
Is it operating?
It is operating.
At what capacity?
It produces, it may be in the affidavit of the Secretary of the Cement Commission. It produces approximately, I think, 200,000 tons of cement.
Where does this get its raw material, do you know?
I do not know.
Where does the South Dakota plant get its material?
Most of those raw materials are located in the state of South Dakota. It's fuel, coal comes from Wyoming, natural gas comes from North Dakota.
But the rock, the
limestone,
ore, the limestone
is quarried right at the mine site in Rapid City.
And is that state owned?
Yes, I believe it is.
Is that the only quarry like that in the state?
I do not know.
Mr. Kerbin, do you know if there's been any change in the capacity of the South Dakota cement plant since it was first put in? Started operation?
When July of 1978, when the cement plant experienced the shortage that we are discussing here today, and they were bringing online a new production expansion facility, which would almost double its production. So they had problems with production at that time, and that would have doubled the capacity, as I understand it, of the plant before 1978. The new facility will actually double its production, which...
Let me ask you one other question. If the state were to restrict its sales or consumption of its output to public facilities, such as public highways, public buildings, bridges, and the like, would you think there would be any objection to that? Any constitutional objection to that?
Only if the state was actually using the cement for its own uses and not selling it to its citizens. I would agree with that.
There would be no objection to
that. Right, I would have no objection.
The point is that once it goes into the open market, it should be treated like that.
Once it's sold to a citizen in a non-governmental type of an activity where it makes a sale for its citizens.
Do you think a state can restrict its purchases of supplies for various public uses to in-state sources? Could they buy all their printing and all their paper and all their own, say they didn't operate their own thing, from local sources just to favor local business?
Only if they, I would say that it would be unconstitutional unless they pass the balancing test this court has traditionally employed to determine whether it's only has an incidental effect on interstate commerce.
Well, are you saying that the legislature of South Dakota couldn't pass a Buy South Dakota sort of program requiring all state purchases to be made from the state if they were available?
If that regulation has a significant burden on interstate commerce, if that were a showing, I do not believe it promotes any legitimate local interest, which this court has previously recognized, because the purpose of that, assuming, would be for the economic gain of the citizens of South Dakota.
I thought this court had specifically upheld in-state printing requirements.
Printing and versus Askew case, the Florida case, that there was a summary affirmance of that statute, but
let me ask you one other question. There always seems to be a man named Hughes in this area, but not in your case. You mentioned Hughes against Oklahoma. Do you think that case is closer to this one than Hughes against Alexandria Scrap?
I would say the Hughes v. Alexandria Scrap is closer than Hughes v. Oklahoma case.
And you feel then it cuts in your favor?
Hughes v. Oklahoma?
No.
Hughes v. Alexandria Scrap?
Yes.
Well, I would distinguish Hughes v. Alexandria Scrap. I do not believe that Alexandria Scrap can be extended to include a preferential policy by a state which is engaged in a non-governmental service, or in this case, a actual regulation of commerce. The state of South Dakota claims immunity under Alexandria Scrap, saying that their conduct was similar to that of Maryland in the Alexandria Scrap case, in just simply participating in the marketplace. But I submit to this court that much more than being a participant, they became a regulator of interstate commerce when they adopted the policy. Only by regulating interstate commerce could they accomplish the purpose of providing their residents with a preference.
But I thought you said, at least by statute or regulation, they had no prohibition against anybody else going into the cement business.
Not going into the cement business, but this policy, this preferential policy of who could buy from the cement plant, affects my client because no cement was available for him to buy. It was taken up by South Dakota residents. The South Dakota Cement Commission eliminated competition for its cement from residents in the six-state area. And that's how they were able to supply their residents with cement.
So you would distinguish then between a policy of a state producing company like this that sold only to state-owned entities, which you would say is all right.
Yes.
And a policy of a state-owned entity like this, which sold only to persons or entities residing within the state, which you say is bad.
That's correct. The options that South Dakota had at that time for an even-handed treatment of not only its own citizens, but the consumers and customers who it had traded with previously, was the 50% allocation policy, which gave all persons the right or the allocation of cement based on the previous 3 years' average of the previous 3 years' cement purchases. And that would have been perfectly acceptable to Reeves to be able to receive that kind of allocation because it did not discriminate against Intercommerce. And the classifications of South Dakota as being either a participant in the marketplace or even being in a proprietary rather than a governmental nature or activity does not preclude that state from regulating the market. Because in this case, with a large segment of the market in that area being handled by South Dakota, it could in effect regulate interstate commerce.
What if this had been a municipal utility in South Dakota that it had extended service into Wyoming at a certain time and then found it, say it was supplied by hydroelectric power of a short season, bad season, and it simply didn't have the generating capacity anymore. Would it be permitted under your view of the Interstate Commerce Clause to cut back its services to only South Dakota municipalities?
If the decision was based on a rule of reason or a good business decision, I don't think that anyone can object to business withdrawing from certain market areas. The position is that this was not, our position is this is not a marketing decision. If a hydroelectric company, because of its facilities, must in fact cut back, and it's a reasonable business decision, it's not based on the fact that it's where you live, but it's where the distribution lines are. It's not that you're a resident of the state of Wyoming, but that the distribution lines or the capacity just isn't sufficient to supply that electricity to Wyoming. Then in those cases, if it's a logical business reason, there is no violation because there's really no discrimination against interstate commerce.
What if there were some lines going to South Dakota communities that were longer than lines going to near Wyoming communities?
Well,
and the hydroelectric generating plant nonetheless said we're going to serve first South Dakota demand.
In that case, I would say that's unconstitutional. I think that's an impermissible burden on interstate commerce because it discriminates against interstate commerce. It's a disguise of a form of creating a benefit to its own citizens, which, if it was a substantial burden, couldn't be overcome.
When you answered some questions of both mine and Mr. Justice Stevens about once entering the stream of commerce, then they took on all the burdens. Now, go back to the hypothetical I put to you that South Dakota set up a cement plant which would be exclusively to supply the contractors who were building South Dakota roads. And you, I understood your response to that earlier was that would be all right. But has not that cement gone into the stream of commerce as soon as they begin to sell to the contractors who are building South Dakota roads, because some of them might be contractors from North Dakota, Minnesota, Wyoming and Nebraska?
Your Honor, I understood your first question as being directly used by state employees themselves. I didn't understand the contractors being in your first question.
Now we have then, from your point of view,
the contractors in the first question, I believe, that if they supply a contractor who is doing a job for a public hospital or a public road or any other public facility, that is interstate commerce.
And South Dakota could not confine, under the Commerce Clause, could not confine itself to those South Dakota public works projects.
I submit that it cannot, unless it builds the hospital itself and it uses the cement itself.
Mr. Carabin, I don't know that I caught fully why you think Alexandria is distinguishable.
The distinction of being a participant in the marketplace, in that case, it appears to me that the state was attempting to accomplish a governmental function of keeping a clean environment. Here, the purpose and policy of South Dakota is not what has been traditionally defined as a governmental function, but is one which seeks to gain the economic opportunity of the citizens of the state of South Dakota. That's clear in the Eakin versus the South Dakota Cement Commission case, which is cited in the briefs as the state case involving the...
Well, as I understand it, he suggested that Maryland had a state interest, an important state interest, which was served by the manner in which they limited the pickup of described.
And also, private enterprise in Maryland, as I understand it, was in business in scrap processing market, but they were not effectively taking care of the junk cars to keep a clean environment. And so the state has stepped in and taken over that aspect to the extent that it does now clean up the environment. I presume it has some effect on cleaning the environment.
Well, there is another distinction, but I question whether it's worth anything. In Alexandria, the state was the purchaser. Here, it's the seller. Does that make any difference?
Well, it seems to me that it does, because it's difficult to resolve the differences between purchasing, just like there seems to me that a state needs certain purchases to operate. It needs pencils, it needs paper, it needs gasoline. There's a difference between the state buying those materials which it needs and saying, well, we're going to buy all the pencils for all the citizens of the state. That, I see, is a distinction between the two purchases. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Governor Janklow.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. As I begin the oral argument, I'd like to touch upon some of the questions that were raised by members of the Court to counsel during his argument. First of all, the fact that the South Dakota is in the cement business comes as a direct result of the South Dakota citizens being in the teens and the 20s, some 50, 60, 70 years ago, about 70 years ago, being unable to get the cement they needed to do the things that normal society carries on, things like building hospitals, building schools, building roads. A good analysis of this is found in the Eakin case that both of us have cited in our briefs. And the South Dakota Supreme Court made very, very specific findings in its determination in the Eakin case. It found, for example, that cement and its products are commodities that are necessary to the people of South Dakota. They cannot be produced at the present time through individual effort. That the construction of highways, bridges, streets, paving, sidewalks, and public buildings within this state, cement is necessary. They found that the use of cement is rapidly increasing in South Dakota, that a serious shortage of the supply of cement is threatening the people of the state, that there have been a shortage on many occasions during the previous years, that the shortage has interfered with and delayed both public and private enterprises, that the materials for making of cement are found in large quantities and at necessary points within the state. I think that answers a couple questions that have been raised. In addition to that, nobody can cite any statute anyplace in the history of South Dakota that says anybody who wants to, including Mr. Reese from Wyoming, can't come to South Dakota and go into cement business. There's no statute that says that Mr. Reeves can't come over and haul our raw materials over to Wyoming and make cement. There's no regulation.
Governor, supposing the state owns all the land on which the raw materials for cement are available, would your argument be the same?
Sure it would. As far as South Dakota.
How could somebody else come in and go into the cement business if you owned all the raw materials?
You mean all throughout the entire state of South Dakota?
Yeah, I think I don't know the facts, but assume they're concentrated in a certain area and that you happen to own that as public land.
I think that as long as it wasn't opened up to anyone, that they wouldn't have an argument. I think once it was opened up to some private people, it would be a different situation. But that's not even approaching the case that we have in this situation.
But you've opened up the cement market to private people by selling to private people.
But that's no different than a private individual, unless it's being suggested that somehow in the history of the Commerce Clause that there's been a dual standard set up that's different for government than it is for private individuals.
Well, Governor, do you think the South Dakota could charge one price to local residents and a higher price to people in Wyoming?
No, sir, not with the 14th Amendment in place, I don't.
Why not?
Because I think the Equal Protection of the Laws Clause would apply.
You think the Wyoming purchases are entitled to be treated equally with the South Dakota purchases?
In terms of price?
In terms of price.
I would, yes.
Why not in terms of quantity, then?
Pardon me?
Then why not in terms of
quantity? Because I think that when you talk about a discrimination under the 14th Amendment, if there's a valid state purpose, they don't go behind it. You've got a different standard completely when you're talking about a 14th Amendment case.
Right. I don't understand the distinction between subsidizing local residents by giving them a bargain and subsidizing local residents by letting them have all the available supply.
Well, the issue is what is government formed for? And we have government in South Dakota, as they do every place else, to take care of the need of its citizens. Our government in South Dakota doesn't function for Wyoming citizens or Iowa's or Florida's or anybody else's. It generally functions for the needs of the citizens of South Dakota. And the endeavors and the engagements and the functions that we get into are those things that have been determined as a legislative policy to be the things that the citizens of South Dakota need.
Does this record show what is the investment of the people of South Dakota in the cement plant?
I don't believe the record shows it.
Well, I suppose that's a matter of public knowledge.
I think the court could take judicial notice of the fact it's around $40 million because the records of South Dakota, which are public records, would indicate it's about $40 million.
Over what period of time?
Over the period of time since the cement plant was built. The capital and the
suppose you sold the cement plant to a private company, and then the legislature passed a law saying the company may not sell outside the state.
We couldn't do that. That would be an absolute constraint against the Commerce Clause, and we agree to that.
As long as the state owns the plant, you can do it.
Yes, we can do it as long as the state owns the plant. And this court has indicated that in previous decisions. In the Alexander case, the Maryland case, this court, Justice Powell in his decision specifically alluded to that.
If the plant were owned not by the state but by a private company, could that private company decide to break off all its sales to out-of-state residents?
Absolutely.
And sell only in within the state of South Dakota?
There's never been any...
Clearly couldn't it?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And once we think the key issue in this case is, are we a regulator or why are we in a proprietary aspect of government?
Right.
If we are regulating interstate commerce in a direct sense, or even in an indirect sense, then we think that we fall under the Commerce Clause. If we're not, we don't think we fall under it at all. And that's what we think the key distinctions of this case are. This is no different than colleges. The governments get into colleges. We charge people tuition, some states more, some states less. But nobody would argue that South Dakota can't prohibit all out-of-staters from coming to its state schools because of the investment we've made in trying to educate our people. Now, as a matter of fact, all states allow out-of-staters, but there's a discriminatory policy that every state has that basically favors their own citizens. And providing an education isn't really any different than providing the buildings that people go to get their education or the houses that they live in when they're growing up. As far as paying taxes, the question was raised, and I think the court could take judicial notice of the statutes of South Dakota, although it's not in the record, that the state cement plant does pay severance taxes to the state government, just exactly like Homestead Gold Mine, the gravel pits, and the other aspects of enterprise that deal with the severability or that deal with severable resources being taken from
taxes,
the state.
Pardon me? They pay income taxes?
We're one of three states that doesn't have that. We don't have an income tax, Mr. Chief Justice.
You
we have property taxes, and the property tax fever going on in our state also. But the property taxes are paid to local government by the state cement plant, again under a statute authorized by the state legislature.
There's about $40 million been invested in the plant. Do the public records disclose whether or not over the period of its life the plant has been profitable or unprofitable?
It has been both.
It's taking the entire period into account.
It has had, over the entire period of time, I can't answer that. I can tell you there are years when its cash flow is a plus and years when its cash flow is a minus. But I don't think you can call that profit or non-profit because the state doesn't, governmental accounting doesn't take into consideration historically the payment of taxes. It doesn't take into consideration depreciation and the bookkeeping
method. You
can't
tell me whether the plant's made money or not?
I can tell you that it ends up some years with a cash surplus, but in terms of a bottom line net, in terms of proper accounting, I can't tell you if that's a profit. But I can tell you every year for the last several years, for example, this year, the legislature in the preparation of its annual budget has ordered that $9 million will be transferred from the state cement plant to the state general fund to assist in reaching a balanced budget. Last year it was $7 million. The previous year it was $5 million. But there have been years when nothing's been transferred because there wasn't any excess cash.
Have there been years in which general revenues have been applied to the fund to keep it from losing money? I mean, you know, to keep it going?
To my knowledge, no, because
then,
they've had
then
the bond.
Isn't it a fair inference that the plant has over the years made money?
No, it has had positive cash, but that's not making money. You can end up with excess cash at the end of the year and lose money. Because they may not be funding their depreciation. They may not be putting funds aside for...
But if they always have... If every year in which they do something, it's always giving money to the general revenues, it seems to me the inference is inescapable that they've made money.
There are years when they borrow money when they're short. Several years ago, they borrowed several $1 million. They have the power to borrow.
Have they ever defaulted on any of those loans?
Pardon me?
Have they ever defaulted on any of those
loans? No, sir. To my knowledge, no, sir.
But you don't know whether the plant has made money or not. That's the bottom line as far as you answer my question.
That's right. In a accounting sense, I can't answer that.
But in any event, the plant, the operation is at risk of losing or making, just the way Chrysler Corporation has been.
Or any other private enterprise. And I think the thing that we have to keep into context is, as both briefs will indicate, what happened in 1978 to cause this problem? We had a new kiln coming online, and the new kiln was really to replace the old kilns, which were built 70 years ago. Their pollution, they have a lot of pollution, and this new kiln will equal the production of the old ones. It just so happens there was such an incredible demand for cement about the time this was done, they didn't shut the old ones down. They've been pumping it out as fast as they could ever since. But there's a limited lifespan available to those other ones. Is plaintiff in this case arguing that we could force them to buy cement from us if they ever quit buying from us on the theory that their refusal to buy from us is an interference in interstate commerce? For them to be logical, they're going to have to concede that point, that they can't just put all the burden on us and say, if they choose, they can come to us and buy, but we can't choose to force them to buy from us.
Governor,
and the logic would be the same.
South Dakota have any other special enterprises like this cement plant? Your neighbor to the north has the Bank of North Dakota.
Yes, sir. It does, Mr. Justice.
Are you in any other business besides...
We were in the coal business in the 30s, and we went broke, and we were in rural credits in the 30s, and we went broke. These are enterprises that flow from that old La Follette, Wild Bill Langer in North Dakota,
sure.
Norbeck in South Dakota tradition that grew up back in the 20s and 30s, where that populist tradition got the government into those fundamental services that wasn't being provided and couldn't be provided at the time by private enterprise. We, who consider ourselves a very conservative state, have a state-owned cement plant. North Dakota's got a bank in there and is in the grain business. And I think they also still have a coal mine in North Dakota. Nebraska's in the power business. And we don't allege for a minute that we can go down to the Nebraska Public Power District and force them to sell us electricity, because they do go across state lines in the grid. They're hooked into the national grid. And that was brought up in the Court of Appeals.
Well, if I might be so bold to suggest, I think Minnesota is also in the municipal power business. In many parts of the state, there's been competition between public and private power sources, has there not?
That's usually local governments, is it not?
It's local governments, the rural electric administrations, and private, the investor-owned utilities, the REAs, and municipal governments. There are many communities that had their own municipal power plants throughout the entire upper Midwest, some of whom still have them, most of whom are now hooked into the major power companies.
When you were in the rural credits business, did you lend on farms outside of South Dakota?
No, pardon me?
Did you lend on farms outside?
No, to my knowledge, no. We didn't lend on farms outside of South Dakota. But if you go all the way back to 1920, how did we start selling to Wyoming? Way back in 1920, the record will disclose in the appendix that the minutes of the commission back in 1920 specifically stated that if they ever had any excess over and above the needs for South Dakotans, they would make it available to other people. And when we ran into this problem in 1978, what did our commission do? It said, we will give preference to South Dakotans and everybody we have a contract with. Now, Reeves comes in here and argues, and has come to all the courts and argued, we didn't have a contract. The briefs will show, or the record will show, that we had 75,000 tons under contract at the time we ran into trouble. And our cement plant said, we will fulfill those contracts irrespective of where those people happen to be located, any place in America. Plus, we will take care of South Dakotans. And after we've taken care of South Dakotans and fulfilled our contracts, we will go first come, first serve to everyone. What they're complaining about is the policy we established. Theirs would be that you take it on the order of either first come, first serve, which is nonsense. You force people to just go put in a big order, bigger than they needed, so they could sell it to others in terms of a shortage. Or two, if it was on a pro rata basis, to put in a bigger order than they needed, hoping to get a larger share of what they actually needed. What they're complaining about, really, Rees is complaining that he didn't have the foresight to go sign a contract with the cement plant.
Governor,
we fulfill our contract.
Did you say that the end use today of the production of the cement plant is in every case in a public building or a public road or something?
No, sir.
It could go into an apartment building?
It does. It does.
Generally to which the purchaser, as long as he's a South Dakotan, wants to put it, he may not.
Well, everybody may today. Since June of a year ago, there's been no restriction again because the production's up. So everybody's being taken care of. But I would answer your question, yes, that South Dakotans would come first, but it does not go into just the public enterprises.
Do we have any idea what the percentage is that goes into private as against the public enterprise?
I can tell you that a year ago, I think the record would show that of the 750,000 tons, someplace around there, 278,000 just went into highway paving contracts in the state of South Dakota. A year ago, we had to stop the building of the poor Indians' housing on the reservations, and the record reflects that. We had to stop the building of the school in Spearfish, South Dakota, and the record will reflect that. We had to stop the building of hospitals in South Dakota because everybody ran out of cement. There just wasn't any.
Well, this was before you built the new facility.
No, sir. This was afterwards.
Even after?
This was afterwards. There was just the only reason we don't have another year like that this year is because interest rates are 20%, and you know only the Arabs can afford to buy right now to build anything. Nobody else can. We can't. There isn't anybody in the Midwest that can afford to build at 20% interest rates. If we could, we wouldn't spend our money building anything out there.
You've emphasized in much of your argument the necessity from the viewpoint of your state to have this cement plant. Would that apply to a sporting good equipment plant, for example? What I'm interested in is how far down the road of governmental necessity would your theory take you? Is there any sort of manufacturing plant that you would say the state could not operate and impose these restrictions on its product?
To be logical, I have to say yes. I can't think of any.
Well, what about my example, say a plant that manufactured ski equipment?
Again, I think that you'd have to look at, first of all, well, my answer would be if a private business can say, if Coors Beer can say we're not selling in South Dakota, if Wilson Sporting Goods could say we're only selling east of the Mississippi River, then I think that a government can do it. I don't think the Commerce Clause draws a distinction between what the government does and private business does when you're talking about proprietary functions as opposed to regulatory functions.
It's not likely to happen in this country, but in theory at least, a state, I suppose, could socialize most of its businesses. And could it then deny to interstate commerce the products of all of those businesses?
I'd say yes, but. And my but is, on condition that Congress has the right under the Constitution to say that it can't be done that way. They haven't clearly enunciated that. But Congress does have the right, does everything to some respect touches commerce, and we don't even argue that, interstate commerce. And as a result, Congress could prescribe that, and you'd have a different set of issues. But we don't have that here.
Governor, you rely heavily on the distinction between proprietary and government functions, and you argue, as I understand you in substance, that you're just like a private proprietor who can make a private decision not to sell to somebody he doesn't want to sell to.
Yes, sir.
But is the decision to confine your sales to local residents really motivated by proprietary considerations or by a governmental interest in the welfare of the local citizen?
It's by governmental interest in the local citizen, but that puts us into the proprietary business. There are some people that go into business for goodwill and not for profit, but they end up making a profit.
See, if this were a privately owned entity, well, is there any reason in the world why it would limit its sales to local residents?
I have to say yes. Because I know that, for example, half America screaming they want Coors Beer and they won't sell it to them. Only some states get it. I don't know why, but we can't get it. So there must be sometimes when a business decision is made to limit it to certain geographical territories.
But presumably that's done for economic gain of the seller. that you don't contend that this is an economically motivated
business? Not at all. It's a governmentally motivated business, a public policy motivated business. Mr. Justice Powell said in the Alexandria case, and we think it's just, and I hate to just lift certain language out of it, but it ties into the whole thing that the case was discussing. Nothing in the purposes animating the Commerce Clause forbids the state, in the absence of congressional action, from participating in the market and exercising the right to favor its own citizens over others.
Mr. Chairman, I take it then that if you open a contract, if you put out bids for building a highway, do you let foreigners bid on that?
Yes, sir. We do, sir.
And even though they aren't residents of,
say an individual
contractor from Denver operating in his own name comes up to bid up there, do you take his bid?
Yes, sir.
Would you sell him cement?
In South Dakota?
Yeah.
Sure.
I thought the restriction doesn't this restriction provide for sales only to South Dakota residents?
Yes.
So that even if the cement was going to be used in South Dakota, you nevertheless would bar a sale to a non-resident. That's the way I take the restriction to be.
All right, as I understand it, that's correct.
So you might say that you want the cement to be used in South Dakota, but you really are saying that you want it to be used in South Dakota by South Dakota citizens.
No, that's
the way it operates.
Well, except only at one period of time when they ran out, and that, honestly, it never came into discussion.
I just ask you again, if a Denver contractor came up and bid on South Dakota, on the South Dakota, he might just as well stay at home because he couldn't buy cement up
no,
there.
No, sir. If he had a contract, would have been taken care
He's
of.
He's not a resident.
Except everybody that bids, it's in the bidding industry, a contractor's got a firm price on cement before he goes and bids.
Well, he wouldn't bid because you wouldn't sell him cement.
At that particular time, that's probably correct.
At that time, but that's the way the restriction is.
I understand that. And at that time,
he could nonetheless bid on a South Dakota road project, and if his bid were a low bid, it would be accepted.
We couldn't buy South Dakota cement.
I slightly hesitated because we do have provisions under our state law that give preference to South Dakota bidders, and I do know that in the purchase of materials and personal property that there is a preference for South Dakotans, just like the Florida case, the Eskew case, but I can't tell you whether or not that goes all the way to road bidding, so I don't know if I'm being correct factually in the way I respond. I don't know that it carries that far.
In calling for bids, You could provide, I assume, that the successful bidders would be permitted to buy South Dakota material.
But this, not really.
Why not?
The state cement plant is an independently run organization. I have no power. Our governor, the legislature would have to change the law to tell the cement plant what to do. They have independent commissioners that once they're appointed, they're almost sovereign in terms of how they do their own business. Consistent with the law.
But by agreement.
By
agreement, that could be accomplished, that the successful bidder would be able to get his cement in South Dakota from this plant.
But for plaintiffs to be correct, you'd have to look at a whole litany of services. It just so happens that we happen to be dealing in cement. Other states that deal with power, every state with their educational institutions, Maryland when it was trying to get rid of junk cars, all of these things that when you get in a quasi-proprietary or proprietary area, you'd find the argument that somehow it's a restraint on interstate commerce. It just doesn't apply. Nobody would argue that a private business couldn't do exactly the same thing. I, as a person that wanted to build a new private factory, could provide that only South Dakotans bid. I could provide that anybody who gets the contract must buy their cement from the South Dakota cement plant. And certainly I wouldn't be here as restraining interstate commerce.
Well, suppose I'm an individual in the retail business and I have a chain. And I'd like to come up and establish a retail outlet in South Dakota. And I have to build. I'm going to build. And so I want to buy some some cement from South Dakota. And they say, are you a citizen? And I say, no. And you say, sorry, no cement. Right?
Well, yes, but. And I say but because
well, yes,
there is
but.
A...
Well, yes, but. All right, let's take,
well,
let's, take,
the,
let's, take the, let's take the period of shortage. You would say, sorry, you're not a citizen.
Well, I can't. Because of the Privileges and Immunities Clause, we're dealing with a corporation here, and I do draw a distinction between a Privileges and Immunities Clause. Privileges and Immunities Clause says I can't do that to citizens.
But anyway, you only sell South Dakota cement to South Dakota citizens.
To residents.
Residents.
Yes,
South
sir.
Dakota residents.
To residents.
Only to South Dakota residents.
That's correct.
And this fellow, and you say to this fellow, are you a South Dakota resident? He says, no, I just want to do business in South Dakota. I just want to establish a, and I want to build a building.
But that's no
sorry,
different.
Bring in your cement from Wyoming.
What we're doing is what a private business can do, and nobody argues they can.
Governor, you're not limiting the sales because a private business would do that. When you limit the sales, you're acting like a government. And I don't see why it's different for the government to limit its own sales when it's doing it for a governmental purpose and for it to limit the sole private seller in the state for a governmental purpose. And you admit you couldn't do the latter.
I don't follow you, sir. I'm sorry.
I thought you admitted that if there were a private owner of the plant, the government of South Dakota could not accomplish the purpose it sought here by saying you may only sell you the to
that's
South
correct.
Dakota. That governmental purpose would not justify that regulation.
That's correct.
Now, I think you've also acknowledged that in operating the plant, although you normally operate like a private entrepreneur, with respect to this particular decision to limit the sales to South Dakota residents, you're acting for governmental reasons.
That's correct.
And part of the governmental reasons would be that the taxpayers of South Dakota, I take it this is one factor for you, have invested $40 million and they might turn out like Chrysler Corporation.
We could lose. If somebody opens a competing modern cement plant, Rapid City is only 30 miles from Wyoming, across the border in Wyoming, or in the same city, they could drive us out of business. We may be inefficient. Like all government, we may not be able to compete with private enterprise if they set up. We don't know, but if they did, we wouldn't be here complaining that somehow their competition violates the Commerce Clause. What they're complaining about is they made poor market decisions. They didn't plan ahead any better than we did. And now somehow they want us to bear the brunt of the responsibility for the lack of their foresight in making a wise management decision. The record will show that we went out and tried to buy cement. We bought cement, thousands of tons of it all over America, and moved it into South Dakota and sold it at a cheaper price than we bought it for, to try and take care of people, to fulfill our contracts and to take care of others. We were in an absolute emergency situation because the production didn't equal the demand.
What was the original reason for constructing the South Dakota cement plant?
It's all in that decision, that 1920 South Dakota Supreme Court decision. They enumerate about 12 reasons, but the reasons were there were no cement plants. I believe the record says within 175 miles
so if there was
of the state
to
of South Dakota.
If there was cement available in South Dakota, it had to be supplied by the government, by this government-operated plant.
Right. There was none available in South. There was no cement plant in South Dakota, and I believe that case says that, and within 175 miles of South Dakota's borders.
So conceivably, the plant could have supplied cement and nonetheless supplied it at a loss to the citizens of South.
There are times when it did provide it at a loss. Reeves isn't in there arguing today. We've got cement piled up all over the place. There's no demand now because there's no construction. We're not here suing him, counterclaiming, arguing that he ought to take 50,000 tons from us because the place is swimming in clinker and cement because nobody will buy it right now. So it just, they happened to run into a bad time last year. We're in a bad time now, and we're not suing anybody. We're eating our loss.
Well, has the commission suspended this?
As of a year ago, June, last June.
Now it'll sell to anybody?
Now it sells to anybody because it has the product available again. It can take care of everybody.
And so Reeves can get all it wants?
Reeves got 72 tons yesterday, as a matter of fact. I checked this morning. He's been getting it for a year.
Well, what's the case on it? What's left of this suit right now? Why isn't it moved?
I have no idea.
Have you suggested that it's moved?
No.
We
haven't.
I suppose you suggest that in a time of shortage you're very likely going to restrain your sales to citizens.
We would do that, and I wouldn't be honest if I didn't.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock. Governor. You may continue.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, I would like to draw a correction, if I may, to some of the facts that I stated this morning, I think in response to Mr. Justice Stevens' questions. I draw your attention to three pages in the appendix, pages 31, 25, and 13. It deals with what the policy is of the Cement Plant Commission, and I'll read it. On pages 31, 24, and 13 of the appendix, it's been stated three times historically. The first time was in 1920, where they said, and I quote, that there would be a ready market for the entire output of the state within the state. In case there is a surplus, a ready market is available in adjoining states. Then in 1974, the commission in its minutes, and I quote from the minutes, the commission expressed its desire that South Dakota customers and South Dakota contracts, not residents, but South Dakota customers and South Dakota contracts be given preference in compliance with the Constitution and statutes of the state. And finally, in 1978...
Where were you reading from?
That was page 24 on the appendix. At the bottom.
I see. Thank you.
And finally, on page 13 under the commission meeting minutes of 1978, of June 1st, and I quote, the commission discussed the plant's major commitments requiring approximately 218,000 tons of cement for 1978 paving projects only. After discussing all these matters at considerable length, the commission reaffirmed its policy of supplying all South Dakota customers first and to honor all contract commitments with the remaining volume allocated on a first-come, first-served basis. So to be correct, we should state that what we are not giving preference to residents, but to customers in South Dakota and contractual commitments across the board.
But would a Minnesota contractor who came out there and was the low bidder on a road contract and set up an office and ordered some cement, would he be a
South Dakota customer? This would indicate yes. Huh? This would indicate that he's a customer. It doesn't say a preference is to South Dakota residents.
I suppose he doesn't make a bid until he knows how what his cement costs.
That's the policy within the... But I can't say it always happens that way. The plaintiffs, or the appellant, I should say...
Well,
in this,
excuse me, Governor.
Excuse me.
But South Dakota customer, I gather he'd have to be one who did what the Chief Justice suggests, namely, establish a place of business in South Dakota?
I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
Well, could Reeves do that?
For a job in South Dakota? I would assume
would
that
Reeves
could.
Be a South Dakota customer if it came to, to the commission?
If this was discussed at the lower court, and it's in the transcript of the proceeding, unfortunately there wasn't a trial in this case, it all was done on a TRO, and there were arguments of counsel with no testimony, it all came on affidavits. But in some of the discussion and the testimony from the trial court, from the hearing on the TRO, you can see where the discussion was made where the state's council said that a South Dakotan could even buy the cement and we couldn't prohibit them from selling it to Mr. Reeves.
Let me come back to what we talked about a little bit this morning. Someone did. With cement running out of your briefcase now, literally, is there a case here? Since it's only a TRO, no damages.
I would assume... I would like to say no, but I would assume there is only because we still have the policy. It just so happens we're not short right now, so it may be moot for today, but if we run short again, I would have to tell you that we would again have the policy.
This isn't the kind of thing that would evade review. It would be of some long-lasting period.
That's correct. It's never happened before. In 70 years, it's never happened before.
Well, Governor, suppose, I'm not quite sure what your answer is, suppose a South Dakota contractor bids on a job in Wyoming, and he's a citizen of South Dakota, he's a resident of South Dakota, he does business in Wyoming. Will you sell him cement to take out of the state for the Wyoming job?
I would have to say yes, we would. He'd be a South Dakota customer. And finally, I'd like to say that this court was...
A South Dakota contractor can compete in Wyoming with South Dakota cement, but a Wyoming contractor cannot.
Well, that's no different than I would say yes, because
it's
not a private
business. It's a yes or no. It's yes
Governor,
or no.
Let me ask you this question, because I would have read the Appendix 24 differently than your answer to Mr. Justice White's question suggests, where it says The commission expressed its desire that South Dakota customers and South Dakota contracts be given preference. Now, supposing that Peter Kiewit, which when I was practicing was located in Omaha, came up and bid on a facility to be erected in South Dakota, would that be a South Dakota contract?
Yes, I believe it would be. That would be a South Dakota contract. There's no other way to define the term contract as it's used in this context. Well, it doesn't say contracts entered into only in South Dakota.
So that Mr. Justice White's question before the recess about the Denver contractor doing a job in South Dakota is answered differently now than
that's correct. That's why I brought this up. I'm sorry. I thought I meant Mr. Stevens, but it is Mr. Justice White.
But you still agree that that apparently that Peter Kiewit from Omaha, if he was doing a job in the northern Nebraska and wanted to buy cement from South Dakota, couldn't buy cement from South Dakota, whereas the South Dakota contractor bidding on that same job could.
That's correct. And we could do the same thing to his kids who wanted to go to school in our state. The final thing, for about 5 seconds, is that this case was sent back to the Eighth Circuit by this court for a reconsideration in light of the court's decision in Hughes v. Oklahoma. And even the appellants in this case agree that that case doesn't apply, and they try and evade it. And we all agree that Hughes versus the Alexander case, the Hughes case from Maryland, is the one that really is the one that's most controlling and is more dispositive of the case.
Let me ask you one other question, Governor. Are there quarry lands available in private hands in South Dakota, does the record show, or does the state condemn and purchase up all of the quarry lands from which cement material is obtained?
Our public records would show that virtually the entire state of South Dakota could be used for making cement, and the state of Wyoming. It's limestone, coal that you get from the Powder River Basin. They have part of the ingredients. And aggregate the materials that are readily available virtually all over America west of the Mississippi River. There's nothing unique about these particular spots where we happen to have our plant located. Our original cement plant was in Yankton, South Dakota, 300 miles east, 400 miles east, and was moved to Rapid City. You could put them up any place. Minnesota's considering doing it right now over in the Pipestone area.
Mr. Kirvin, you may have heard the question I just put to you, the governor. This being only a TRO, and in light of the subsequent discussion, you think we still have a case here?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. The question of the policy being enforced at any time is that the South Dakota declares there's a shortage has an immediate effect on my client. In that effect, any period of time which it takes to have that matter resolved is going to cost my client money.
Now, well, that alone is not enough reason to keep the case alive.
Well, there's no assurance that the policy won't be enforced against Reeves in the policy again as soon as the shortage occurs. In fact, in May of 1979, the policy was enforced against Reeves. And Reeves received an allocation formula based on expected needs of South Dakota being met first, and then Reeves received an allocation in May of 79, Your Honor, after 78, when the shortage occurred. So it's obvious that they intend, in all probability, will have or enforce the policy the next time.
But is it the fact that I understood you got some 72,000 units of yesterday, was it? Are you getting all you need now?
At the present time, yes, mm-hmm. Your Honor.
And the prospect is that you may be able for some while to get all you need?
I would assume that during the summer of this year, with the economic condition in the housing industry and with the demand being less, that there will be no problem this year. But the problem arises is in Wyoming with a short construction season, a critical point for my client. In that period of time, if that policy is enforced again, even the time that was lost in this suit, which was only 19 or 21 days, or actually it was about 30 days, that my client, the harm is tremendous.
Well,
it's
what is the construction season?
Well, construction season for the ready-mix concrete begins about June and goes through October for my client.
Does your client compete with any South Dakota contractors in Wyoming?
It competes with South Dakota ready mix dealers in Gillette, Wyoming at their plant. And that is really the essence of our claim, is without South Dakota cement, we cannot compete in the Gillette market with South Dakota ready mix dealers.
And they can buy the cement and you can't.
That's correct. That's correct.
So they are bringing the cement across state line.
That's correct.
And you can't.
Well, we cannot go into the state.
Well, yeah, but they won't let you buy it.
That's right.
And because you're neither a South Dakota contractor nor a South Dakota job.
That's correct. That's correct.
Or a customer. Customer is the word as well as contractor, isn't it?
Well, it says South Dakota customer, but we apparently do not fit that definition. I think that implies that you're a South Dakota resident, as used in that policy.
There would seem to be some very practical ways that could be met by setting up an office in Rapid City with a telephone operator, apparently.
Well, it's the comparison between other types of activities like electricity in Nebraska is not the same, because you cannot drive to Nebraska and say, give me a bottle of electricity. I live in Wyoming, want to take it with me. That's all we're asking for. That involves a different type of an activity. We are not saying to this court that South Dakota is forced to enter into any market areas, that they're forced to sell in any one state, as to that they must put distribution lines or open up. All we're saying is that Reeves Inc. has a right to go to any state in this national marketplace and be treated the same manner under the Commerce Clause without any barriers imposed.
As South Dakota customers.
As South Dakota customers.
And you don't draw a line between South Dakota as a state and South Dakota as an operator of a cement.
Well, our position is...
I mean proprietary to governmental. You don't draw a line.
That state ownership of this product does not make it immune from the implications of the Commerce Clause.
Well, no. I said it's different, though, isn't it? You don't recognize any difference.
Well, in this...
If it were not owned by South Dakota, you'd have no case.
Exactly. Well, I don't know that I wouldn't have any case. I don't... The assumption that private enterprise would be able to do this carries only so long as they do it absent anti-competitive motives, because that private enterprise is governed by the Sherman anti-competitive.
A single defendant here. You don't have any possibility of a conspiracy or an agreement with anybody else.
Unless it's...
And a private cement company clearly could do this, couldn't it, under the established law?
Absent anti-competitive motives and assuming no violation of the Sherman Act.
You don't have any agreement, don't any possibility of agreement, and you don't have a monopoly here, do you?
Well, I don't know if there hasn't been a conspiracy among the citizens of South Dakota and its state.
Well, if you had a private enterprise, how could you have a conspiracy among the citizens of South Dakota?
Well,
a private enterprise, it might be a conspiracy among their directors and officers to sell, not to sell to you. But that's no violation of the antitrust law.
I just think private... Seller could refuse to sell you because he didn't like your necktie.
Exactly.
Well, that's true. My only statement was that if there is a violation of the Sherman Act, which I don't know that there isn't a conspiracy with the citizens, the governor went into state court representing not only the state but the South Dakota general contractors of that state to have the 50% allocation policy enjoined.
But when you say, therefore, that state ownership doesn't immunize this in the antitrust law, you're implying that a private cement mill would be violating the antitrust law if it did this. It wouldn't at all, would it?
Not under the,
no,
the specific...
No, an individual cement mill wouldn't at all, would
if
it?
If there was a conspiracy of some kind, it would.
Well, how could there be a conspiracy with only one seller?
Well, if they conspired, if a private cement mill in South Dakota conspired to sell with all of the citizens of South Dakota to them exclusively, I think there might be a violation.
Kerbin, isn't really your point that there's no reason why a private seller would restrict his sales for a governmental purpose?
Well, that's true.
The only reason they're doing it is they've said themselves it's for governmental reason, not for any economic reason.
That's correct. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.